Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Relationship Pod. If you're new here, my name is Sarah Boutros. I am your host, and I am a relationship coach who helps women build more confidence and security in their relationships. This week, I am joined by someone who's doing phenomenal work when it comes to heartbreak. Keegan is a certified relationship coach and heartbreak expert who's going to be talking to us about what it really takes to move through heartbreak, the biggest mistakes that people make when they're trying to just get over it, and how to start rebuilding trust in love after loss. We also explore how heartbreak isn't just something to recover from, but something that can be catalyzed into deep nervous system healing and rediscovery. If you've ever felt like your pain was too heavy to hold or that love might never feel safe again, this episode is a gentle, powerful reminder that healing is not only possible, but it can be life-changing. So let's get into it. Welcome, Keegan. I am so excited to have you on this podcast. And I want to kind of kick it off by asking you about your own personal journey, as I know that you kind of went through your own heartbreak, which was the catalyst to you being where you are today and starting your business. So can you share a bit more about your experience and what it taught you about yourself that led you here?
Starting with a banger. First of all, I wanted to just say hi. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here. So I think that when I think about the concept of heartbreak, I always like to think about it kind of in like three different sectors of life. I think our first heartbreak that we experience is typically from an initial caregiver. And it might be one parent, both parents, it might be a big heartbreak, a smaller heartbreak, but that's kind of where the story starts. And then I think the second heartbreak that we experience is the one with ourselves in and out of relationships. And then I think the third heartbreak is ones that we experience with other people. So if I were to follow that kind of storyline in my heartbreak story, I would say that my heartbreak started with my father, an estranged relationship there. And because of that abandonment, the second heartbreak with myself is around self-abandonment in relationships. So that's kind of where all of that starts. When I was 19, I got into a long-term relationship. I was with someone for about 6 years and we grew together. We had a home together. We had dogs together. And I started to outgrow that relationship. And I spent the last couple of years of that relationship in a really weird, dark, icky place. And when I finally found the courage to leave, because I was so fleshy and I was so woundy from the ending of that relationship, I kind of crashed into another story of pain and heartbreak, which I'm sure lots of people will be able to relate to. And so that's kind of the storyline. To make a long story short, I think that after that second crash, I had a moment where I was just in so much darkness and in so much pain that I started to get really curious about what I was experiencing. And I became wildly fascinated with the phenomenon of heartbreak. And that's kind of like the seed of what started my work. So it's a long story. Everyone has a long heartbreak story for sure. But I think it starts when we're children and then it grows and it takes different forms throughout our adult lives. But that's the story. That's where we'll start with that.
Yeah, I love that. And what was the stage of that heartbreak that you experienced that, you know, became the point of your transformation? Because obviously you went through a rabbit hole of being obsessed with learning about it. So where did the growth happen that brought you to where you are today?
I think everything shifted for me when I started to take real responsibility for my pain and my suffering, which is obviously a really challenging thing to do when you are in darkness and when you're navigating loss and ending. But I think something that's really, really powerful that we forget about is that ownership is such a remarkable source of power. And so when I had kind of hit rock bottom, Being able to look around and recognize that I was the common denominator in these situations, which again is a little bit of a gut check, right? Like I'm sure you've experienced this before too. It can feel a lot easier to blame and to fault the situation or the other person. But I think everything really changed for me when I was willing to show up in that way. So to step out of my victim mentality, to step out of my defense mechanisms, and to get really curious about the role that I was playing in the pain that I was experiencing.
Yeah, I love that. And what did you learn for yourself in terms of the pain that you were experiencing? Like, what did you learn about your role in that heartbreak, and how did you use that as a catalyst to grow?
Yeah. Specific to myself, that was when I really started to get really clear on the ways that I would show up in relationships and connections and abandon myself. So I would shrink, or I would mold, or I would stay quiet. I would stay small. I would take up less space. It's a coping mechanism. It's a survival mechanism that I think many people have, many women especially. And so I learned that I had so much pain in these relationships, and there was abandonment, and there was a feeling of not being chosen, and there was a recurring pattern of choosing unavailable partners. And what I learned about myself is that I was all of those things. I was abandoning myself. I was not choosing myself. I was unavailable to myself. And so that allowed me to start to move into my healing and my relationships in a completely different way.
Yeah, I love that. And I might caveat off some of the questions that
Please.
I've written, because I
want
a natural conversation. I totally resonate with you in the terms of like how powerful it can be to look at where you've contributed to these things. And I'm curious about how you navigate that spot without blaming yourself or putting yourself in an even deeper hole, because I've been through that myself as well, where especially when you get into this like personal development healing stuff, and you can very clearly see your patterns, and in the process of seeing those patterns, you're also trying to navigate grief and heartbreak and some level of insecurity, right? So how do you find the balance between the two in order to empower yourself to move forward?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I'm glad that you brought this up, because I think that we have to be really careful in the self-development spaces. Sometimes we can take such radical responsibility that we can shove ourselves into holes, right? Yeah. And it can become almost a form of like punishment.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, maybe to start answering this question, the first thing I would say is that it's a journey. And you will flow, you will ebb and flow. In some moments you will be harder on yourself. In some moments you will probably not hold yourself as accountable as you should. And you'll kind of sway back and forth as you find the balance. But I think a big thing that helped me shift in my mindset was really moving away from the concepts or the phenomenons of like blame and fault, and instead getting really curious about this word responsibility. Like, it's not my fault. This isn't my fault. And I can give myself so much grace and so much acceptance for the fact that I didn't have the tools then to show up the way that that might have put me in a better situation. But I get to have responsibility for my story. I get to be the creator of my story. That's actually really, I don't know if it feels like it to you, but that feels really liberating to me. To know that I am the creator of my experience. And so can you pivot the phenomenon and the concept of responsibility into a more like agency rich experience, if that makes sense?
I love that. Yeah, it's a much more empowering place to be navigating heartbreak from. And I'd say heartbreak is probably one of the most disempowering feelings that you could possibly experience. So it's a really great way to look at it. In terms of empowering yourself in that process, was there anything specific that you did or that you currently do with your clients right now to help them cultivate more self-love and more self-empowerment in that process?
I think that our culture and our society have kind of embellished this idea of self-love with like bubble baths and pedicures and Chinese takeout, which, by the way, I highly recommend participating in all of those things. But I think that real self-love happens. I think what I've learned through my own work and through the work that I do with my clients, and I'm super curious to hear your thoughts on this concept as well, but I think that real self-love occurs and has the ability to grow through alignment and through keeping our word to ourselves. So, to put it simply, walking the talk. I think that when we show up for ourselves and when we create and honor healthy, kind boundaries, when we have standards for our relationships that we're actually willing to follow through with, when we have expectations of how we show up in love and how the people that we want to participate in love show up. And again, I think these words they've gotten really tight and hard, like boundaries is really buzzy and standards is really buzzy. So I want to make sure we're always coming at it from a super loving, kind place, but I think self-love is cultivated through self-respect and self-trust, and I think that that is practiced and that skill is refined through doing what the fuck you say you're gonna do, right? And holding yourself to standards that you say that you have and embodying the energies and the alignment that you speak out into the world. So that's what I would say. I'm curious on your thoughts on self-love. I think it's a fascinating concept.
I absolutely love what you said, and it's definitely such a big part of it. I think in the context of heartbreak, I feel like there's different stages where, and different stages of heartbreak require different stages of self-love, in my personal opinion, and the way that I work with my clients. Because when you're in the trenches of the pain, sometimes showing up for yourself is really fucking hard. It's really fucking hard. And there's going to be a lot of, insecurity. There's going to be a lot of self-hatred, a lot of pain. And I think that the foundation for the work to begin is in learning how to accept where you are. And that's not to say that you accepting that you're going to be this way forever, but just meeting yourself where you are and being like, hey, it's actually okay to feel like this. It's okay to feel like I can't show up for myself. It's okay that I'm angry. It's okay that I'm resentful. Like validating your experience, but also just pouring into yourself in the sense of the way that you speak and relate to yourself. Because I feel like that is what gives you the strength and the foundation then to move on to the next part. Because what I can see happening so often is that people will want to go into fixing mode right away. They're like, how do I become more confident? How do I get over this breakup? How do I, take the lessons and just move on? But there's a whole entire grieving process that has to happen, and that includes grieving yourself and who you were in that relationship. So I think self-love is in that stage for me, pouring into yourself with that love and that kindness and that reassurance and tending to those really tender places, until you get the strength to be like, okay, I'm moving out of this grief, I'm moving out of this pain. Now, how do I start showing up for myself in a different way, which is a more action-oriented way?
And I would spin that just like one a little bit further. When you're speaking about like essentially the like holding yourself in that really icky dark place, I would say that that actually is a version of showing up for yourself. And like you said, it just looks different then. Like we pivot a little bit and then it gets to be more action oriented and then it gets to be more like confidence based. But in the beginning, I think that holding yourself, validating your experience and allowing yourself to be in the darkness and not rush out of it, I think that's such a beautiful way to show up for yourself.
No, it's very true. It is showing up for yourself. But yeah, I see that more of like an internal thing, and then I guess the boundaries and the standards, I see it more as a external thing. It's like, how do you start showing up
Yes.
in the world and in relationship to other people? But yeah,
Totally. I love
I'm
that.
in agreement with you. It is 100% still a way of showing up for yourself.
Yeah, internal, external. I think that's a brilliant way to think about that. Yeah.
So in your own heartbreak journey, what was your way of showing up for yourself? Was it more along the context of what we discussed, or is there anything that you felt like was missing from that piece that you think would be really helpful for people?
I think it was exactly the way that we discussed. I think that it was a balance. And sometimes too, what we have to remember with grief is it's not always one and then the next, but sometimes a combination of each, depending. I mean, you know it. Grief is so whooshy. It's like a wave, right? Like it'll come and it'll knock you on your ass, and then it'll leave for a little while and it'll be like, okay, I'm doing it. I think I feel better. I'm doing it. And then it'll come and it'll knock you on your ass. So I think, yeah, balancing that internal and external. I worked really hard to give myself grace and give myself acceptance for the moments where I couldn't show up, I couldn't be bold, I didn't feel brave, I didn't feel confident. And then embracing the moments where I did. And like I said, practicing honoring the things that I had stated or believed I wanted to be real about, I wanted to be reality about my relationship. So I think it was both of those things for sure for me. Yeah.
I love that. And I love what you were saying about the waves, because I think there's so much power in just understanding that the process is like that. It's
It's
not a linear
crazy.
process.
It's not even a little bit fucking linear. It's not even a little bit. And when you think you're like, those moments, I'm sure you can relate where you're like, I think I'm okay, right? You're like, I think I'm like good. I think I feel better. I've like grieved this for the last like 2 years. Like let's get on with our lives. And then a couple of months later, you'll be down bad for a sec. And yeah, and allowing yourself to have that experience, like welcoming that spectrum of experience is actually how you move through it. And when we resist, that's when we get really stuck.
100% agreement with you, 100%. So that kind of leads on quite nicely to the next question, which is, what are the most common mistakes that you see people making when it comes to navigating heartbreak?
I think that there are two. And one is going to tie in nicely to what we were just talking about, but I think that people they deeply crave like finality in the heartbreak story. They crave the moment that we all watch in the movies where the girl like goes to Europe on a trip, right? And she's like looking out at the view at the end of her trip and the sun is setting and in that one moment, everything shifts into place, and she's like, I don't hurt anymore. Like, I'm over it. I'm over him. I'm ready to move on. And people, they wait so patiently for that like final moment. And it never comes because the truth is that heartbreak is always alive in our experience, and it takes on different forms, and it takes on different people, and it takes on different stories and situations. But pain is such. It's such a present and important part of our experience. So if we can detach from needing that moment where everything shifts and we can allow instead ourselves to just like be in the experience and to know that it's going to get easier, but we're never actually waiting for this like big epiphany aha moment. I think that's a big mistake people make is they're waiting for that final moment. And then it never comes because it never comes. And then I think the second thing, and I teach my clients this a ton in my work, is a lot of people, they think that they should or they want to wait until they are over someone or over something to move on. And I actually like to flip that. Okay. So I think that getting over someone or getting over something, it's like a result. Okay, so it's like an outcome. It's going to happen down there as a result of the work that you're doing. And I think moving on, and when I say moving on, I don't mean finding a new partner or going and having a bunch of hookups or what dating immediately, but moving on is kind of this decision that we make to walk forward, right? Like to keep going. And we stop waiting to book the trip with our best friends. We stop waiting to have these experiences. We hold ourselves and we take time in that process, and we know that sometimes we'll have more capacity to go out and do than other times. But if you're waiting for that finality to get over someone, baby, you're gonna be waiting a long time, right? And so, if we can make the decision, moving on to me is really about like believing that there is more for you and believing that there is more waiting for you and just putting one foot in front of the other, knowing that the getting over will be a result. Does that make
Yeah, I
sense?
love that. Yeah, it makes total sense. You need to take action first, and then the rest will follow. For
Totally.
sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Because if you don't, then what I've seen ends up happening is that people stay stuck in the story and they stay stuck in wanting to find that closure and overanalyzing
Closure.
why did I do this? Why did he do that? And just constantly trying to create a narrative in their mind that they feel will finally make them feel safe and finally make them let go
Yes.
of what they're going through. And I think that that is probably one of the trickiest parts of heartbreak to navigate, is just that incessant trying to understand and put the pieces of the puzzle together just so that you can feel safe in your body again.
Yeah, we want our pain to make sense. And the funny thing is that pain doesn't really make sense. It's just there. And closure, we get obsessed. I think that people get obsessed with closure, which is fascinating because we are waiting for some type of interaction or apology or explanation. And oftentimes we're waiting for that from someone who has probably shown us that they can't really give us what we need, right? Or what we want. And so, yeah, I think closure ties into that finality aspect too, where we obsess and we get stuck in our pain. Yeah, and if we can learn how to have a little bit of mobility in that process, then the other stuff will happen as a result.
Yeah, absolutely agree. One of the things that I speak a lot with on my clients who are dealing with heartbreak is how to give closure to yourself. And I'm curious to hear about your perspective on how you do that for your clients.
Yeah. That's a great question. I think, kind of going back to what I was saying before, I think closure happens when we choose a new belief blueprint. So when we've been stuck in those stories that you're speaking about, and when we're kind of obsessing over trying to understand exactly why something happened, and maybe if I had done this differently, or maybe if they had done this differently, and when we choose to kind of like segue away from that and move towards a belief. And this also requires body work, I think. I think it's hard to just mindset our way out of healing, but towards a belief that this thing that is making you experience the deepest pain you have ever experienced, that is making you question yourself more than you have ever questioned yourself, that is pulling you through this intense emotional flood of pain and suffering. Please, I need people to try to believe that that is not the end of your story, right? So sometimes we romanticize that pain. We're like, we use it as a way to like kind of solidify or to like support our theories that we have that it was true love and that it should still be happening. But it's at the end of the day, we have to get really honest. Like, I'm suffering because of this. And I would like to believe that there's more to my love story than this suffering. So I think what you're talking about in terms of self-closure, it's shifting into a new belief system, which is away from being obsessed and romanticizing the pain of this specific story and moving into the place of, I believe that there's more for me. And I believe that the love that is actually meant for me someday, it will stay. It will choose me. It will not make me hurt in the ways that I'm hurting right now. Love hurts no matter what. Relationships are hard. But yeah, I think it's a shift in the belief system about what is possible for you in your relationships.
Yeah, I love that. And is there something specific that you do with your clients to get them to that point where they're seeing that truth for themselves?
I think that this is where I start to segue into the somatic work. I think that mindset is such different practice. Mindset practices are like brilliant, and they deserve a spot in our healing journeys. But I like to explore the addiction they might have to pain, the obsession they might have in their stories. I like to explore that in their bodies. And I like to facilitate and help them create a new experience or a new response to those things inside of their bodies. So that's kind of a process in that. I mean, you could say that's a lot of the work that I do, is looking at the ways that we get stuck and the ways that we identify with our pain and the ways that we become addicted to our suffering. Not consciously, right? It's a learned response that we have to protect ourselves. And starting to really explore that from the neck down. And then we can bring it back to the mindset work as well.
Yeah, I love that. And for anyone who's listening to this and is sitting at home and wants to understand how they could try exploring that for themselves, how would you suggest they do it? Or do you suggest that they...
Well, I think everyone should take liberty to begin their somatic journey no matter what. Of course, it helps a lot if you have someone facilitating that work for you who knows, who is deep in that world. However, I'm going to give just like one little tidbit of something you could try at home. Can you explore an emotion that you're having or a story that you live in? Can you explore it through sensations in the body instead of story in the mind? So sitting with something, and instead of, you know, I'm really sad because XYZ and this is what it means about me, can you sit and say, I feel sad right now, and can I just notice that? And what does that feel like? Like, where do I notice it? For me, I feel a lot of my sadness in my chest. It feels tight. It feels hot. And so allowing yourself to kind of explore some of those sensations and checking in with yourself. And if it starts to feel really whooshy and overwhelming, you can start to bring yourself out. But I think that's a great way to start, is bringing more awareness to what the actual experience is that you're having in your physical body versus what the chatter is that tends to take over our brains when we are having a deeply emotional experience.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love that. It's something that I use with my clients as well. And there's something really powerful about dropping out of the mind and into the body.
So
because
good.
You give yourself the space to feel that thing. And what often happens is that it dissipates pretty quickly, depending on the intensity of what you're feeling. But it's the story that actually keeps it running. The story that you tell yourself over and over again is just heightening the emotion that you're feeling. But as soon as you drop out and you go into your heart, into your body, wherever you're feeling it, and you just give it that space, it just wants to be seen. And it drops. Yeah, it's super fun.
I think that feelings, when they feel the most intense, they are just asking to be felt. And it's funny because we'll resist it because we think, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not dealing with that today. I got work to do. I got somewhere to be. And like you said, sometimes if you just give it a little bit of space, like if you just open the crack in the door a tiny bit, it will dissipate because it'll move. It's energy, right? It's an energy inside your body that's asking to be moved. And we can move energy by feeling it.
Yeah. Super powerful. I love that. So there's obviously the piece around navigating heartbreak, but there's a lot that comes with the aftermath of that, which is when you start feeling ready to put yourself out there and start dating again, How do you help people start to build trust and love again after being hurt so deeply?
Do yourself a favor and find all of the data and the evidence that you can to prove the beliefs that you have around love being bad, love being hard, love not being worthy of your trust, to prove all of those things wrong. So everyone has experienced this. When we choose a belief system or when we choose a viewpoint or perspective, our bodies are brilliant, our minds are really brilliant. It will find ways to confirm those beliefs, right? Confirmation bias. So use that to work in your favor in your healing. So look around you and notice the relationships in your life that you actually admire, whether that be one that you have with a friend, whether it be, I have several couples in my life, right? That I'm like, that is dope. Like, that is a really dope love story. And I like to be around them and I like to feel their energy. And so, as you are opening again to the experience of love, find evidence that helps you believe in the experience of love. And I think when you start there and you look for those little moments or you look for those little interactions, it starts to shift your beliefs around what is possible in love and trust for yourself.
I love that. I love that. And I think that to add to that, another piece of that rebuilding trust has to start with you too, right?
Yes, say more.
Learning how to trust yourself. Learning how to trust yourself. Learning that you have what it takes to navigate whatever is going to come your way. That's a big piece, I feel, as
That's
well.
so good. Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. It is because when we go through heartbreak, we lose that trust because we feel like we made the wrong decisions. We feel like we picked the wrong people. We bypassed our systems and our alarms and sometimes, and that goes back to what we talked about at the beginning, that radical responsibility. Sometimes it can make us like, fuck, I can't trust myself. And so, yeah, doing work around the way that you can trust yourself in pursuing new relationships is a massive piece. How do you do that with your clients? I'm curious.
Well, one of the things that we do is a bit of a like a values exploration, because what I find a lot of the time is that people end up totally losing themselves in the heartbreak, and they're so caught up in the healing of that process that they're focused on the pain, but they're not so much focused on reconnecting with themselves at the highest point of the pain. So it's about learning about who you are. Again, outside of that relationship, maybe bringing parts of yourself back, getting rid of some, adding new parts in, kind of like rebranding yourself almost.
Yes.
And then thinking, right, with this new value system and the way that I want to show up in the world, what are my needs and what are my boundaries that are aligning with my values? And just making a list of the non-negotiables. It's sometimes just having that level of self-awareness once you've dealt with the pain and you're on some level like ready to move forward. It helps you approach new relationships with a totally different lens. I've had clients that have been through some terrible shit, really terrible shit in their last relationships, and once they've kind of processed the pain and they've gone into this process of discovering themselves and understanding what their new values are. They go into dating and they're like, this would have attracted me before. And I would have got sucked into this before. But because you've got like almost this blueprint of how you want to show up in the back of your mind, you see it so clearly and you're like, I'm not doing that again. So quite
Yes.
a process, yeah. But there's also something around control that people have to actively work on, because another trap is like, okay, I've done all this work, I know who I am, I know what my boundaries are, and I'm going to be forever protected from future pain, and
Yes.
I'm going to end up in my forever relationship, so I don't have to worry anymore. But that is rarely ever the way that life goes, right?
Right.
You can never predict what is going to happen. And nor should you try to like try to control a specific outcome. The most important thing that you can do is just keep showing up in alignment with your values, setting your boundaries, expressing your needs, and trust that if something is going to happen, that you will have what it takes to deal with it, as opposed to just super fixated on controlling the circumstances. I don't know if that really made any sense, but
no, that made so much sense. And what you just said at the end, it's more about trusting that you will have the capacity to deal with it versus trying to control it. That's really powerful, because I'm sure maybe you've experienced in your own story and in your clients' stories, when people do pursue the journey of self-development or healing, there can be that phase, right, where they're kind of like, nobody's getting in. And like, if you don't behave the exact way that I want you to behave in this dating experience, no, you're not for me. I'm moving on. And that can be the other side. That can also be really dangerous, and it can keep us really isolated and alone. And so finding that balance, and I'm going to take that. That's such a juicy nugget of just, I can trust myself that I can handle it, even if shit does hit the fan again, because it might, absolutely.
So that, I mean, I'm glad it resonated with you, but that's been a big one that I've realized as well. It comes back to thinking that there's like a final outcome or destination, that you finally get to this place and everything is sorted, but life doesn't really work that way.
It never works that way. Yeah. It never works out exactly how we plan it. It's just not in the cards.
So what is kind of like the biggest piece of advice that you would give to someone who is navigating heartbreak right now?
The biggest piece of advice that I would give someone that isn't that sexy or shiny, but is the truest piece of advice, is that you are going to get to the other side of this. You are going to find your way through this. I think that heartbreak is a pain that makes us feel deeply alone, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's so dark and it's so yucky that when we are in it, it can feel like no one understands, which is interesting, because it's actually one of the most shared experiences on planet Earth. And millions of people before you have experienced it. Millions of people are experiencing it with you right now while you are. And people after you will experience it. And so be really careful with how you isolate your own experience, because it can be easy to fall into the mindset of like, no one could ever understand. And because of that, how will I ever survive this? Because it's so dark. It's truly so dark. And so I think the most important piece of advice is just to always remember you are going to get to the other side of this. And to go one step further, you're going to love again. And I know that sounds absolutely fucking insane when you're in it. But continuing to remind yourself that this is an experience that can be survived. We have endless proof of that, and you will not be an outlier to that. You're special, but you're not an outlier to your healing. Your healing is inevitable. So that's what I would say.
I love that. And I love what you said as well around like there's evidence that you will get through it. Because a lot of the times people have been through many heartbreaks, and the most recent one will always feel like the worst one.
Totally.
And it feels like the end of the world. But
yes,
if you look back on how much you've already been through and how much you've already overcome, you're able to see that you actually will be fine. And what was it that... my mind's totally blanking right now because my day's been full of calls.
It's okay.
That I want to say, if it comes back to me, I'll bring it up again, but it's totally left the building.
It's funny when we think about how when we are in a heartbreak, usually most people can remember back to a different heartbreak where they were also like, how the fuck am I gonna get through this? And then they got through it enough, not only did they survive it, but they got through it enough to have a new experience of love that shattered them in a new way, right? And half of that is like, yes, it's sad and it's hard that you're going through this again, but you have so much evidence to know that this is an experience that you will survive. So always remembering that. Yeah.
Yeah, so true.
I think it was cool to hear some of your approaches to heartbreak with your clients too, and to just get like a little peek into your work, because obviously we follow each other on social media, but that face-to-face is, it's cool, right? And I like to share time with other women who are in this industry who have these experiences, because you know, I'm sure you know this, like when you own a business in this space, there are so many people I would imagine in your life who support you, but not everyone necessarily understands it firsthand. Yeah. And so getting to have conversations with other women who are in the industry, it's like such a beautiful reminder that we're like doing the good work. And I'm stoked that I got the chance to talk to you today.
Yeah, likewise. I think you're actually the first person in this industry as per se in terms of anything relationship related, but there's definitely a different level of resonance in the conversations that we have together in comparison to, you know, I love my friends and everything to pieces, but
totally,
yeah, it's definitely the same.
Yeah, and my friends might be tired of talking about heartbreak. They're like, bitch, why do you always want to talk? Just kidding. I try to keep it to a minimum, but for sure, it's nice to talk with people who are just, they're in it. So yeah. I appreciate you having me, and I'm sure we'll get to do it again at some point, but it was a great conversation.
Sure. Yeah, I've really, really enjoyed it. And definitely we should do it again. There's so many different like layers that we could go into when it comes to stuff, and even doing a podcast on the more somatic side of things would be really interesting, because I think that this is it's been something that's been around for ages, but personally for me it's something that I've only recently discovered, and I'm finding that a lot of people in my network, especially like my clients, never heard of it before.
You're right. It's been around for decades and decades and decades. And I also think that somatic healing is taking over the world right now. It's starting to really be on the up and up, and for good reason, because it's going to change everything. It changed everything in my own healing journey. It's changing so much for my clients. So yeah, that would be a really cool conversation.
Yeah, that would be awesome. How long have you been doing it for, personally, for yourself?
I've been in healing spaces for fucking ever. I am therapized as hell. I started therapy when I was young. I've done a lot of work, but I dropped really heavily into nervous system work in the last 2-ish years. And it started with a lot of more global, like more universal practices of nervous system work and regulation, like breath work and tapping and, you know, stuff that we can all kind of find through like a quick Google search, which is awesome. Then I started moving and getting really, excited about the somatic experiencing lens, which brought me to tears, which obviously we're in together, which is so cool. Yeah. But I think that I had done so much work, and it wasn't until I really, really dropped into the nervous system stuff that I was like, oh, healing is like really available. It's really available. Yeah. It moves That's the needle incredible. On a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And I think the more well-known or well-versed ones like the breathwork and stuff is amazing. It just doesn't hit to the core of it though, does it?
Mm-mm. It doesn't. And we have to remember that a lot of bodies, especially highly traumatized bodies or bodies that are in a lot of pain, they don't always feel safe integrating modalities that we have been told are just like super, we can grab them and we can go. If someone feels ultimately unsafe in their body, then asking them to focus on their breath and be in their body, they might be like, fuck that. That does not feel calming to me, right? And so recognizing that there is a ceiling to the more like accessible modalities, but actually going deep into the experiencing lens of somatic work, it's such a game changer.
How can people connect with you if they want to learn more about the work that you're doing and get more of your juicy wisdom on navigating heartbreak?
So the place that I'm the most present right now is Instagram. So my handle is at girl goat, like the animal. So girl goat coaching. I am super passionate about content, so I'm always flooding stuff there every single day. I have a free newsletter that you can join. You can kind of navigate that through my Instagram, but that's where I would start. And then obviously you can explore a little bit deeper if you're curious about coaching or starting your somatic healing journey if you're navigating heartbreak. But Instagram is a really good place to start, and yeah, I'm always pushing content out there, so definitely give it a look.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Conversation. Yeah, it's been awesome. And it's really good to connect as well.
Awesome.
For
Thank
everyone
you, Sarah.
Who is watching the podcast, I will be releasing new episodes every week. So stay tuned. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the channel. Take care and we'll see you soon.